After a two-day rain break, the New York Yankees came back this past weekend and lost two of three games to their rival, the New York Mets. Yankees sitting one game over 500, essentially halfway through the season. Yikes. We'll talk about it more on this brand new episode of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, which begins right now.
You are listening to the Pinstripe Talk podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, powered to you by Delahanty Media. I am your host, Nick Delahanty. We are essentially now halfway through the New York Yankees season, and it has been a tough go throughout. You hear me laughing because, you know, at this point, what do you do? What do you even say to this? Like, I don't even know what to even say to you guys about how bad the Yankees have really been this year. We're now through 81 games, and the Yankees sit at 41-40. Not the record that I would have thought a week before the All-Star break for the New York Yankees. It has been that rough. And this weekend, after what I thought was going to be a very positive two-day break due to rain, ended up being another disastrous weekend. Yankees lose 2 of 3 to the New York Mets. They take one game in the 7-inning doubleheader that was played on Sunday. What should have been the Yankees taking 2 out of 3 games ends up being the Mets going back to Queens with a series victory. Very utterly disappointing. Some really big names for the Yankees unable to come through. You know, it just seems like that's been the tale of the season. It's what star or what key contributor hasn't really produced. So what we're going to do on this show is we're going to break down the Mets series a little bit. Kind of look at some of the very rare positives that are there. We'll look at the negatives, of course, but we do have a jam-packed week in regards to our show. This show is going to hit the airwaves on Monday night. We are going to release 2 more shows over the next 48 hours. We are going to release our mid-season review for the position players and our mid-season review for the pitchers. So make sure you don't miss those shows. We want to give you guys our grades through the first 81 games of the season for all those players. And remember, the Yankees are on the West Coast, so once that series wraps up with Seattle before the Yankees head to Houston, we'll have yet another show for you as we get closer to the All-Star break. Reminder, follow us on social media at Pinstripe Talk ND on Twitter, at Nick Delahanty on my personal account. We're also on Facebook by looking up Pinstripe Talk Podcast. Our podcast available on all podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, you name it, our show is there available for you. Whatever platform you choose, make sure you do us a solid, subscribe, rate, and review. All your feedback does go a long way for our brand and our show. And of course, check out our brand, DelahantyMedia.com. Go buy some gear, support the show, support the brand, and listen to our other podcasts while you're there. You definitely won't be disappointed. Now let's jump right into this series. And game one, I really, and I mean really, feel bad for Jordan Montgomery because it has been a rough go of late. I wouldn't say he's pitching poorly, but I just feel like he has given the Yankees better outings than his numbers look and just has been hit by some bad luck. In game one of the series, he was matched up with Tyjon Walker, a guy who was on the free agent market, and the Mets ended up signing him. And Montgomery ended up coming out on the losing end of this, not because he pitched poorly, but because Walker was flat-out dominant for the first half of the game, and the Mets' offense did more than enough to bring home a victory. Game was scoreless going into the fifth inning. Yankees did not have a hit in this game until the sixth. That's how good Walker was. 2 walks were scattered around, but nonetheless, Yankees could not do a lot of damage against him. They finally got on the board in the sixth on an Aaron Judge homer, and then they scored another run, or 2 runs for that matter, on a Gio Urshela single. So it wasn't like the Yankees had their way with Walker. Walker really owned them. And for Montgomery, just thinking like a pitcher here, I'm sure that the pressure had to be on as the innings kept going. You know, you're matching up zeros with this guy and you're doing what you can, but after a while, the pressure's got to give. And the Mets offense was able to do just enough to get him out of the game. In the fifth, he was unable to complete five. And then the Yankees bullpen simply imploded. Justin Wilson imploded. I don't want to even say the bullpen imploded. It was just Justin Wilson. And by that point, Yankees found themselves down 8-3. And it was too much to overcome. 8-3 was your final. Yankees only had three hits in this ballgame. Very, very bad performance offensively, like I said earlier. Walker, combined with the Mets bullpen, was too much for the Yankees to handle in this one. Some standouts. You got to give Michael King a little shout-out here. Most people thought he was going to pitch one of the games on Sunday. However, the Yankees finally realized that this guy is better in the bullpen. Came out of the gate, threw four strong innings of work, only allowed three hits, struck out nine Mets hitters over that span. So King was feeling it. This is a role I think that he could really thrive in, a guy that you could bring in the middle of the game and he could eat some innings for you. He has shown that that has been a good spot. We've talked about the issues with the first inning, how he's really struggled at that, but in this outing, he looked really, really dominant. And offensively, there's not really much you could say about this team. Judge hit the homer. Urshela had the single. But other than that, they mustered up 10 strikeouts. Only walked three times as a whole. The Mets had 14 hits as a team. Just not really good offensively. And Justin Wilson continues to stink. Yankees lose the first game of this one. And in a normal realm, you're going into Saturday's doubleheader and you're saying to yourself, well, we have Gerrit Cole on the mound for game one. If Cole could give you six innings and really do the job, saves the bullpen for game two, you take a win, and then you go into game three, and you look to have the series in your home stadium, because how important is that, especially with the way that the recent streak has gone? Well, that was not the case. Gerrit Cole doesn't even get out of the fourth inning. Yes, Gerrit Cole pitched 3 1/3. If you watched the game, you saw vividly how Cole was legitimately tired into that fourth inning. He had to work. Credit to the Mets offense. They did a really good job working the count, making Cole work. A team that swings at a lot of pitches out of the zone weren't necessarily doing that. So Cole had to really work for everything. And let's not go back to the sticky stuff, okay? I get the whole ordeal with that. It definitely has a factor on what Cole's doing. I admit that totally. But this has been a streak where Cole had a bad month of June, and it's lingering into July. I don't know what it is with him. I don't know if it's the adjustment period from the sticky stuff, but as a fan, as somebody who's invested to the team, I am very worried about Gerrit Cole. I think he'll bounce back. I really do. I think he's too good to not bounce back. But if Cole was a product of the sticky stuff, we know how the Astros work and how they manipulate stuff. Nothing new here. If he's a product of that, then what Gerrit Cole are we getting for the long stretch as he's got a ton of his contract left? That's a scary thing. And the Mets were able to do a good job against him. Teams have had his number recently. He hasn't had the command he's had in the past. The strikeouts have been down. Overall, I think Cole's going to figure it out. It's just a matter of when and how. And this Yankee team really needs them to figure it out sooner than later, because it's getting to the point where the starting pitching hasn't done the job and he's the guy that they have to rely on moving forward. Yankees bullpen, after Gerrit Cole, did a phenomenal job. And just after Gerrit Cole, because, you know, we're going to get into that in a second. Loaisiga and Green combined for 2 2/3 innings of work. They only allowed two hits combined, one walk. Loaisiga ended up throwing 41 pitches. I assume that Boone figured hold Green for length purposes because of not knowing what's going to happen in game two. Nonetheless, Green gets the final out of the sixth inning. And at that point, the Yankees have a lead. They're winning this game. They're up 5-4. After the Mets got an early lead on a Dominic Smith home run, the Yankees added three runs in the second, another run in the third, gave them a 4-1 lead. The Mets tied the game up in the top of the fourth with Cole on the mound. And then Loaisiga let up one of the runs that's charged to Cole. And the bottom of the fifth, the Yankees regained the lead, heading into the top of the seventh, where the Yankees had that one-run lead, like I mentioned. And Green, coming off just throwing two pitches, you would assume that Aaron Boone would keep him in the game. However, that was not the case. Aroldis Chapman, who we all know has been very bad recently, comes into the game. And here's how the top of the seventh went. Right away, Chapman chokes, lets up a home run to Alonso, that ties the game. He responds by hitting Conforto and then walking Jeff McNeil. At that point, Aaron Boone said, I seen enough. We're going to go to Lucas Lickey. Lickey, who I swear this poor guy gets thrown into the worst situations. And then he gets roughed up and everybody wants his head because he's in a bad spot. Nonetheless, Lickey comes in. He allows a single to Pilar. And then you got him to strike out James McCann, which was a big out. Then Peraza comes up. He hits a double to left field. A Mets fan actually interferes on it. Could have probably been a lot worse, but nonetheless, two-run score, 7-5 Mets. Nimmo responds right away with a single to right, scoring another two. And then a Lindor single scores another run. So after holding a 5-4 lead going into the inning, a six-run debacle gives the Mets a 10-5 lead that they would not lose or give up. What a deflating loss. First of all, my perspective on this, and I understand the whole logic, and I probably will get some feedback on this, but you have to win the game in front of you. You cannot worry about what's to come because you don't know what is going to come. With Green on the mound, pitching as dominantly as he was, let him finish the ball game. Chapman's been brutal. He hasn't had it. Why are you not using Green in that situation? Let him just close the game. It's a seven-inning game. You still would have Chapman for the nightcap of the game. Use Green more. Instead, Boone goes to Chapman because, you know, we haven't lost confidence in the guy who hasn't pitched well in months. And right away, the damage is done. So the Yankees guaranteed losing the series before the nightcap even occurred. Gut-punching, deflating, with a loss in the nightcap, the Yankees would go to under 500. For a team with this much talent and such a high salary level, they should not be a 500 level team at this point of the season. And of course, you go into the nightcap, Sunday Night Baseball, the Yankees really need a win to go to 42-41 instead of 41-42. They go into this one with Nestor Cortez on the mound. And boy, say what you want about Cortez, but the guy has been phenomenal. In his first start of the season for the Yankees, goes 3 1/3. Obviously, we didn't expect him to go deep into this ballgame, but nonetheless, only allowed one run on two hits, struck out four Mets. And one thing that you're going to see from Cortez, and we're going to touch more about it when we do our pitcher recap for the first half of the year, he's a guy that, he's not your traditional pitcher in these days, right? He's not going to blow 100 miles per hour past you. He's not going to be that kind of guy. He's a guy that is going to be crafty. He's going to mix and match. He's going to throw you off with his motion. He's going to do all the little things that get the job done. And he's a guy that's fearless. He attacks. And that's something I like about him. And he's a guy that really has stood out for me in regards to the Yankees bullpen. You know, we talk about the big stars, you know, Britt and Chapman, supposed to be O'Day and Wilson, but it's the guys like Loaisiga, Green, Cortez that have been doing the job, even Lucas Lickey. So kudos to him. He comes in, does a stellar job. Of course, once Cortez leaves the game, then insert Darren O'Day, who right away lets up a two-run homer to Pete Alonso to cut the Yankees' lead at the time to 3-2. We got to that point because Gio Urshela hit a home run to right field, a three-run shot, and then the Alonso homer cut the Yankees' lead to just one. Bottom half of the fifth, the Yankees are really good at doing this, scoring on wild pitches. Gardner scores from third on a Castro wild pitch, and it was 4-2, and that would be your final. Stand out in this game, not only was Cortez brilliant, but Chad Green. This guy, what more could you say about him? Three strong innings of work, did not allow a hit or a walk, struck out six, had an immaculate inning in the seventh. This guy was phenomenal. Threw 35 pitches over three innings of work. The Mets really had trouble getting on base from him. And after the first couple of games where we saw some higher offensive potential from the Mets at least, both teams were really hampered to score runs. Yankees only had four hits. The Mets had three. So You know what? Offense was a little scarce in this one. You would have thought with Oswalt and Cortez starting, you might have had a little more offense, but nonetheless, the pitching did their job. And the bullpens were both really good. Got to give them both credit where credit's due. So Yankees at least salvage one game in this series, go to 42-41 on the year. But my big question, and what I want to talk about now, is what's next for this team? I really wish I had the answer on what to do as the kind of trade deadline comes closer. But every time you watch this team and you see Aaron Boone sitting in the dugout and then after the game giving the same exact answers to the press, I just don't see this team as a playoff team in 2021. Now, obviously, things could change, and by a click of the fingers, you know, they could get back on track. But I don't see it happening. They have been this stale for so long, I think it's going to continue. Now, we're at the halfway point of the season, and through 81 games, the Yankees were 41-40. They've only had four other starts since the wild card era in 95 began where they were this bad. 95, 07, and 2016, they were 40-41. In 95 and 2007, they won the wild card. 2016, they were 40-41. 2014, they were 41-40. In both those years, the Yankees did not make the playoffs. So it's a 50-50 chance at this point that they make the playoffs. Obviously, more is in their favor. There's an extra wild card spot. There's more playoff spots to be had. I don't think that this team has what it takes to get to that point. And you heard Hal Steinbrenner say, you know, we're willing to go over the luxury tax if we could add a player that will help this team win now. Then they come around, they trade for Tim LeCastro, which, yes, I understand he has speed and defensive versatility, but he's another right-handed hitter who can't hit. He's essentially Tyler Wade from the right-hand side of the plate. They need a left-handed bat, a guy who's versatile. They've gotten no production out of shortstop, out of center field. There's so many spots where you could say, you know what, the production's been terrible at these spots. Yes, Aaron Judge and Wright has been great. Gio Urshela, even though he flies under the radar, has been great. Luke Voit has been injured half the year. LeMahieu hasn't been the DJ LeMahieu we saw the last 2 years. Gary Sanchez had a bad start to the year, but he really bounced back. Luckily, because where would this team be without him? You're playing a third baseman as your everyday left fielder. You have a 35-plus-year-old center fielder who, to be quite honest with you, I called on Twitter for him to actually retire midseason like A-Rod did. Get some young blood up. I don't know what to tell them, but I do want to see some change. And like I said on our last show, if you tuned in, bring up some of these young guys that have the fire and the passion that will challenge these other guys. Why 2016 was so great. Yes, it was a bad year for the Yankees. They weren't the team that everybody expected them to be. They ended up being sellers, trading Andrew Miller and Aroldis Chapman. But what happened after that? You saw Aaron Judge arrive to the show. Gary Sanchez, Tyler Austin. These guys provided a spark for this team. There's no spark on that field. None whatsoever. And until you try to get some guys up that aren't feeling entitled or feel like their job security is there, you're going to have the same stale performance. Yes, we all love Gardner. He's been great. Role player on the old 9 team. We get it. Last remaining champion. He's been around for over a decade. But Father Time has spoken. He has nothing left in the tank. This has been for years now. This is why we have trouble with guys like Clint Frazier, who can't even produce at a big league level. Now he's on the injured list with vertigo. Why we're stunting the growth of our young talent because we're keeping these older veterans in check. Yes, I'm 28 years old now. When I was growing up, a lot of these teams relied on veterans. Veterans were the key. Yes, you had your young guys that came in and provided spark, but your teams consisted of a lot of veterans. But now the game is so reliant on the youth, and the Yankees are missing the curve. And the Yankees World Series window is closing in that process because we all thought they had this nice little window that they were going to definitely win a World Series. And it seems like that window is getting smaller and smaller each day. And I'm not even going to get on Aaron Boone today because, you know, I went on a rant last show about him. I really don't want to talk about him in general. We'll save it for the midseason review show. But nonetheless, something's got to give. Are they buyers or are they sellers? They keep saying they're going to be buyers. They're not even thinking about selling. But maybe it's the right idea to look into selling. Yeah, they don't have much to offer. Yeah, you could maybe trade a Gleyber Torres or if somebody wants him, a Zach Britton. I doubt that anybody at this point wants Aroldis Chapman. But would you consider trading Aaron Judge? If you don't think you're going to compete this year or next year, Judge walks the year after. Is it better to get something for him now and let him go? I don't know. I posed the question on Twitter, and I was surprised by how close it was. I asked, and I quote, would you be okay as a Yankee fan if the Yankees traded Aaron Judge? And for the most part, people said yes. 51.2% of people said yes. Now, I'm in the favor of no, because here's why. I think the Yankees are personally afraid to trade Aaron Judge. They know how much revenue he brings in and how big of a star he is. I think the Yankees are at that point where they're saying to themselves, this guy brings in a lot of revenue for us. He's a good player to have in this market. We can't just let that go. We have to keep him around because they know financially and what he would do to the fan base that has grown to absolutely love him. They're not willing to make that sacrifice. So I think that Judge will obviously stay because the Yankees are afraid to move past him. I think that's the big issue there. And they're going to dish out a big contract to him. And hopefully he's able to stay healthy because that's been a big issue throughout his career so far. So if I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would say, no, the Yankees will not trade Aaron Judge. They'll likely try to extend him this offseason. But I do think that if they're smart and this trend continues, I think it's time to start looking at selling and try to get rid of some of these pieces and try to hit the reset button on the fly. Because you have some guys that are stuck. LeMahieu's pretty much stuck. Stanton is stuck. Other than that, you know, you have some pieces that are kind of workable. Oh, and don't forget Gerrit Cole. He ain't going anywhere either. But again, I think the Yankees have to be smart here, and they have to really evaluate and say, look, is this a fluke, or is this team not built to win? And that starts from the manager down. And you have to look at Brian Cashman as well. I think this is a very important trade deadline for him, because if things start going the wrong way, maybe him and Aaron Boone go out the door together. Who knows? Yes, Cashman has done a lot of great things with the organization, but time gets stale. We see it all the time. Joe Torre, great manager with the Yankees, his time got stale. Joe Girardi had a solid run as the Yankees manager. His time got stale. Cashman's been around much longer than, you know, just this little regime of Boone and Company. It's been around a long time. Maybe it's time the Yankees look in a different direction. Who knows? But I will say, I think that they would be dumb to not consider selling if they have some pieces on the table that teams are interested in. Maybe somebody wants a Miguel Andujar or a Clint Frazier. Give him a fresh start if he's healthy. Gleyber Torres. If you're thinking you're going to sign a shortstop this offseason, what's the point of keeping Torres around? The only players that I would not trade at this point are Gio Urshela, because I think he's more valuable than people give him credit for, and Aaron Judge, because of the publicity. Other than that, I think that, obviously, other than Cole and Stanton, everything else has to be on the table. And it's just frustrating because the way that this team is built, they're not even built to hit well in their own stadium. It was funny, I saw on Twitter, I don't want to quote who it was, I don't remember off the top of my head, but they said the Mets offense is built better to hit in Yankee Stadium than the Yankees, which it is. Lindor, Dominic Smith, McNeil, Conforto, all these guys who can hit from the left-handed side of the plate. And you look at the Yankees lineup and they're putting Brett Gardner out there as their lethal left-handed bat. Like, are you kidding me? That's a joke. But at this rate, You got a series with Seattle coming up, a series with Houston before the break. The All-Star break comes around, which the Yankees have three representatives we'll talk about at the end of the show. And then you have the Red Sox and Rays for 11 of your next 15 games. July is the telling month. This month will dictate if the Yankees can stay in it or not and what their plans are at the deadline. Time's already running out. They're already 10 games out in the division. Now's the time. The Yankees got to make that push in the second half to prove, hey, we had a bad first half, but we're going to come back and show some fight in the second half of the year. Now, before we wrap up the show, I teased about it a couple moments earlier. The Yankees have three representatives going to the All-Star game in Colorado next week. First and foremost, Aaron Judge starting the game in the outfield. Well-deserved. Judge has been playing great this year. The big thing is, for the most part, he's been able to stay healthy. And then the other two representatives, Gerrit Cole and Aroldis Chapman. The way Cole's pitched and the way Chapman's pitched, neither one really deserves it. I think a guy like Chris Bassett should have been in there. There's two or three Yankee relievers that I would have put in the game over Chapman, but nonetheless, they get the nod. Hopefully, neither pitcher goes to the game and pitches, and hopefully Judge goes in, plays a couple innings, and comes back out all healthy and unscathed. But nonetheless, congratulations to them. Although I disagree with two of three, you know, I understand the process and get why they were selected to the All-Star game. So I'll be interested to watch and see what goes down next week. Hopefully, the All-Star break is a good refresher for the Yankees as they look to get back on track. And like I mentioned earlier in the show, we have a big week coming up, so make sure you tune in for all the latest news and updates surrounding the Pinstripe Talk podcast as well as the Delahanty Media brand. That's going to wrap up today's show. Once again, my name is Nick Delahanty. I'm the proud host of the Pinstripe Talk podcast, powered to you by Delahanty Media. Let's go, Yankees. Don't give up the faith. It's hard. We have a couple of West Coast games coming up where we're going to have to stay up late. Take a nap. Make sure you're ready to rock and roll. We need all the good vibes that we can get at this point. Something's got to give. And let's hope that that something turns into some positives for the Yankees moving forward. Until next time, we'll talk to you really soon. Again, let's go Yankees. I can't say it enough. I'm hoping this week sends us some good positive vibes. We'll talk to you really soon.